On ABC Radio National, you're listening to Counterpoint with Michael Duffy and Paul Comrie Thompson.
This weekend, New South Wales goes to the polls and will almost certainly elect its first Conservative government in 16 years. That'll be led by Barry O'Farrell. And many people are asking just how reforming an O'Farrell government might be. Well, the simple answer is we don't know. He's done a very good job at being a small target since becoming leader, and few people probably know if he has any interest in major reform at all. But today I thought we'd look at one big reform proposal I'm sure Barry O'Farrell won't be considering, and that's quite understandable because it's a very big idea. It's whether the whole notion of the Australian state could need to be reconsidered. Now, you may remember that last year Paul spoke with Peter Seaton, a New South Wales Liberal who'd edited a book of policy proposals called What If? Contributors were given carte blanche to come up with ideas they thought were good, and they didn't have to be necessarily politically feasible, at least not at the moment. And some of the most interesting ideas came from our next guest, Percy Allen. He's a very busy consultant, mainly on government, with an international practice. He was Secretary of the New South Wales Treasury for 9 years to 1994, and chaired the state's Council on the Cost and Quality of Government for 8 years. Percy Allen, welcome back to the program.
It's a pleasure, Michael.
You've proposed Australia replace its current big states with a lot more smaller ones. What's wrong with the current arrangement?
Well, I just think Australia's population is going to continue to gravitate to a few state capitals as long as we only have a few states. And that's because both public and corporate administrations in Australia are largely run out of our state capitals. And by breaking up our mainland states into, say, 15 to 25 smaller regional governments, we stand a better chance of fostering socially and economically attractive medium-sized cities as exist in most other developed countries. This would give our regional cities a political importance and critical economic mass to compete for business and population with the existing five metropolitan cities that dominate Australian life and activity.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it, that centralisation has been extraordinarily persistent in Australia. I mean, even compared to a country such as America, they seem to do a much better job there of spreading themselves out. Why have we been so centralised, do you think?
The more I think about it, I think our state governments never really made the transition to being states after the Federation. We have to remember, before the Federation, they were actually nation states. We had six of these nation states. They had their own embassies abroad. They were run like separate countries. And we came together, and I think the states reluctantly gave up their power to Canberra, but they never really moved to being regional governments. Indeed, until recently, and some still do, they still have consulates abroad. They see themselves as nation states rather than regional governments. And with that, of course, comes the view that the capital of that a nation state shall be the most important place. And I think until recently, even the people of those capitals jealously hung on to their populations and resources. But I think that the dynamics of that is changing. I think people, particularly in Sydney, Melbourne, and maybe even in Brisbane now, would welcome further migrants and children born in those cities moving out of the cities because they're becoming very worried about the downsides of congestion.
Yeah, I mean, it is a curiosity, isn't it? Foreign visitors often remark upon it that in New South Wales, for example, Sydney is an appallingly big city now, and yet people on the whole haven't voted with their feet and headed off to Port Stephens or even Newcastle to make those places much bigger than they are.
Well, that's true, and there's a good reason for it. In Australia, we starve our regional cities of money. So professional people, for one, can't move to those places, and if professional people and entrepreneurs don't move there, the rest of the population won't. But I think if one surveyed the people of our larger cities, particularly Sydney and Melbourne, asked them, would you prefer to live in a regional city if it could offer you a job and the facilities that are necessary, I suspect a majority would say yes. Very large cities like New York are loved by elites, particularly professional people, entrepreneurs who can afford large apartments and the fantastic lifestyle. They're loathed by the rest of the population, particularly further growth of those places, because life is very costly and very difficult in those places. The optimal size of a city is very debatable, but the sort of consensus view, I think, is around 1 to 2 million people. After that, only really very rich people can enjoy them. And in Australia, we've already got three cities in excess of 2 million, four cities certainly over 1.5 million. And I think we really should rethink it. My greatest fear with this whole population debate is it's going to turn very nastily racist. And we've got to try to move it away from racism towards settlement. I think a lot of the hostility to migration is really a hostility towards more population congestion in large cities. And if we can move this debate to what should be the settlement of Australia, I think that nasty side would go out of it. Because so many of our regional cities welcome more people, welcome people from overseas. And much of this racism, I think, has more to do with settlement.
Can you tell us how your proposal might work? What might New South Wales, for example, look like?
Oh, look, I haven't gone into the mechanics of this. There have been many writers who've proposed anything between 15 and 25 states. I mean, New South Wales, it's often been said it should be split into to three states, but I haven't gone into the mechanics of that. I think the first concept really has to be, should we have more states? Certainly our Constitution intended that. Our founding fathers imagined it. If we'd been at the Federation debates when they all met and said, look, in 110 years' time, and Australia would have nearly 23 million people, and we'd still only have six states. We would have been laughed out. People said, no, that wasn't our intention. We expect Australia to move towards more states as it grows, but we haven't. Unlike America, which had 13 colonies and moved towards more states, in Europe, I mean, it's interesting looking at the data around the world. If you look at Europe, it has 1,250 states, provinces, or regional governments. America has 50 states. Japan has 47 prefectures. Even Canada has far more states and provinces than we do. I mean, not a lot more, but it has more. We seem to somehow be stuck in a mold, and I think there's a reason for it. And I think the reason is, as I said, that I don't think our states, which were our former nation states, ever move towards being regional governments. And as a result, the capital cities of those states have been favoured in their resource allocation, and it's now very difficult for people to escape those places if they want good jobs.
It's an interesting point. I know many Australians, when they actually get outside the top three or four, or the biggest three or four American cities, are amazed and pleasantly surprised at the smallness and livability of so many of the rest of their cities.
Exactly. Well, if Sydney and Melbourne were in the United States, they'd be amongst their largest cities. And yet, we have 23 million people. America has over 300 million people. And yet Sydney and Melbourne would be amongst the great cities of America if they were based there in terms of
that. You're something of an expert on local government. You conducted a very major review of it some years ago. Just speaking generally, where might this proposal leave local government? Would it still exist?
There are many models of the Federation, but I'm a realist. At the end of the day, I think we have to accept that Australians are very reluctant to change the Constitution, so I think we have to fall back on what the Constitution provided for, which was three tiers of government with provision for growth of states. I mean, the other model would be a federal government which had a strong central government but very strong regional government, so one would collapse local government and state governments into one form of regional government. I think it's too complex constitutionally. I don't think it would get up. So I think we have to accept what we've got, which is three tiers of government, but correct the imbalance. At present, we have a national government which spends 55% of the money, state governments which spend about 40% of the money, and local government which spends 5% of the money. There is no other developed country in the world that spends only around 5 to 6% of its tax dollar and public revenue and other public revenues on local government. Every other developed country in the world that's been researched by Dr. Hammond and others spends at least 10%, and most spend around 20% of their public purse on local government. And yet we've got this huge country with a huge city-country divide, and the infrastructure, once you get outside the large cities, is appalling. These regional cities of ours, where I've done many in-depth studies, I've done more than I think anybody else in Australia with my colleagues, are bereft of resources. And they are struggling to attract people because they haven't even got the money to, you know, build a decent public place in the centre of the city. And a lot of them or a local regional theatre or something like that. They struggle. And the reality is the professional elites and the entrepreneurs who do dictate settlement will not go to these places unless they retire or unless they get some decent facilities so that there is an incentive to move.
One often hears calls for more local council amalgamations as if this would improve things, and the most recent came from David Borger, a New South Wales government minister, former mayor of Parramatta. He made the call only a few weeks ago. Now, you've looked at this. What's your view on amalgamations?
Well, I'm firstly very sceptical about it. There is no academic research I can find around the world that says making councils bigger makes them more efficient. In fact, in Australia, the smallest councils have the lowest taxes, and the largest councils have the largest ones, highest ones. There are some economies of scale that can be achieved from amalgamation, but there are also huge diseconomies. To the extent that there are economies in things like rate collection, there's a very simple answer, which is you can amalgamate the back offices of councils without actually amalgamating the councils themselves. You can develop a virtual council, as New Zealand's done, a number of councils in New Zealand that have very small staff. And they've done that by simply outsourcing a lot of their back office functions to shared service centres, which provided for a lot of private and public organisations. So the same could be done in Australia. So the whole economies of scale thing is a furphy. In any case, all those politicians and states who have advocated it, whenever they've brought it about, the first rule they bring in is that you're not allowed to sack anybody if you amalgamate a council, and you've got to guarantee them the same job in the same place for about 5 years. So, of course, any efficiencies are immediately nulled. And the other thing that happens with amalgamations, and that's why, of course, the union movement loves it so much, is that the first other thing that happens is that everybody's wages have to be equalised. So if you have three engineers, one on $80,000, one on $100,000, and $120,000, the engineer from the council that's paid $120,000 sets the benchmark for the other two engineers. So wages jump by about 20% with these amalgamations. So costs immediately blow up out, and rates have to go up. And the efficiencies are very soon forgotten. So the history of amalgamations in Australia is not one of reduced costs. The one exception was with Kennett in Victoria, but the big efficiencies came from outsourcing. He forced them also to outsource. But the interesting thing is within 10 years of his amalgamations, the rates had blown out again in Victoria because the bureaucracies had started growing.
And an interesting point about the democratic aspect of local government, you made a point earlier that places like America and Europe have huge numbers of relatively small states and provinces. And likewise, I think you've made a point in your writing that those places also have huge numbers of local governments with fairly small populations that seem to thrive.
Exactly, Michael. Australia has 700 local governments. Europe has 88,000 local governments. The United States has 18,000 local governments. And Japan has 1,800 local governments. So the notion that we are overgoverned with 700 local governments is a nonsense.
Do you think, as an expert in government, that there is a potential for significant gains from reform in New South Wales?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The reform is needed on a range of functions. I think we're one of the most centralised states in the world. I think too much is now run out of Macquarie Street. And this is true of departments. We have probably the most centralised education system in the world outside the former Soviet Union and parts of France. We're highly centralised. I think we actually have to decentralise on a number of fronts. We have to decentralise our population. We need to decentralise our administration so that more empowerment of people at the coalface, with the centre still playing a very important role in setting the overall priorities and setting targets and monitoring the outcome and funding it, but getting out of micromanagement. And we need to decentralise government. I'd love to see government in New South Wales move to Newcastle, the parliament be there. That would be a way of starting the move to decentralising Sydney.
That's an exciting thought, but we must leave it for another day. Percy Allen, thanks very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Percy Allen is a consultant mainly on government. He's a former Secretary of the New South Wales Treasury, and he was Chair of the Premier's Council on Cost and Quality of Government, New South Wales, for almost 8 years till 2007. His essay, What If Australia Replaced Megastates with Smaller, Regionally Based State Governments, appeared in What If, and that was edited by Peter Seaton, published last year by Connor Court.
And that's it for us this week. Counterpoint is produced by Ian Coombe. Our sound engineer is John Magic Fingers Diamond. And I'm Paul Comrie Thompson.
And I'm Michael Duffy. Bye until next week.